You are Locked On Lakers, your daily podcast on the Los Angeles Lakers. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Welcome, everybody, to the Locked On Lakers podcast. I'm Anthony Irwin. I am joined, as always, by Harrison Fagan. Harrison, I had to talk you into this show format tonight, and you sounded a little nervous. So how nervous are you to hear one of my insane ideas? So basically, I would argue, would you agree with me on this one? And I'm asking you questions to get
you're just asking me blindly to agree with something you haven't said yet.
No, it's fine. I want your honest opinion to see if there's a hole in my thinking as I arrive at my conclusion or at the conclusion that I arrived at today. So basically, would you say that it helped, hurt, or didn't do anything for Joel Embiid and or Ben Simmons that we didn't see their rookie year? And they had a year to develop both physically and mature in their brains mentally. Jeez.
And help their perception or help their actual ability level?
A little bit of both. And then they finally got to the league and were able to they're considered rookies. Last year Embiid was considered a rookie, though he didn't play enough minutes for a lot of people to vote for him, enough people to vote for him.
Yeah, the Russians hacked the election, according to Sixers Twitter.
And then this year you're watching Ben Simmons run away with the Rookie of the Year thing, even though technically, you know, some people don't necessarily consider him a rookie.
Many people.
So how would you say that affected their development, perception, a whole kit and caboodle? Would you say it helped, hurt, or didn't really do much for them to sit out their actual rookie seasons?
All right, so I'm going to try and get deep here. And I think, it definitely affected the perception of them, because first it hurt it because everybody was like, oh, injury prone bust. I forgot about those guys. And then especially with Simmons' case, he came back this year, more recently. He came back this year, and everybody had kind of just written him off for whatever reason, even though he had just had a freak injury and was probably going to always be fine after he recovered. Mm-hmm. And he came into this year, and he's been incredible. And everybody's like, oh, yeah, Ben Simmons is good at basketball, and we didn't have to watch him go through rookie struggles because Ben Simmons probably would have been good last year if he had played. But I don't know that he would have been this good because he had a year to physically mature, a year to put on strength while just focusing on that, focusing on his body, focusing on learning the NBA and work habits at the NBA level, and just getting to watch NBA basketball and see how that goes for an entire year from courtside seats while getting quizzed by his coaches. That has value. And so I think sitting out the year, and then also the confidence that you get from just not screwing up all the time for the first time in your life, which is what happens to a lot of these rookies. I think on some level we're seeing that with Lonzo Ball right now, where he's just he's never been bad at basketball in his life. And all of a sudden he's having to deal with mentally, while his brother was potentially facing a decade in prison overseas, he's also having to deal with sucking at basketball for the first time in his life. And that'll get in anybody's head. I don't want to say Lonzo sucks. Lonzo has been better than the internet says he is, but mm-hmm. shooting wise he's been very bad.
Lonzo's life that people are talking about him as if he sucks.
Yeah, exactly. That's a good way to put it. And so that's hard to deal with, and that's probably going to compound itself because you're going to try and force people to talk about you differently, and then you're going to struggle more sometimes, or you're going to shy away from it, and then you're going to struggle more sometimes. So I think sitting out the year definitely helped those Sixers guys per the way that they're perceived. And I think it probably also just to a little bit helped them actually in terms of their ability, because they didn't have to go through those struggles and question themselves. And they were just able to come out and have success because they were more prepared for that success than a guy actually coming in their rookie year, if that makes sense.
Absolutely. And that's why, so far you and I are on the same level here, right?
I'm waiting for the fork in the road.
So my question is, what's stopping the league from putting in a redshirt clause? Now, aside from you don't want to draft somebody, especially like number 1, 2, 3, 4, or 5 overall, and then just store them in a broom closet for a year. Marketing and economically, that is not feasible, right? So I will grant that this idea breaks apart or falls apart right then and there.
Well, so we're recording this Thursday. I had somebody ask me today if Ball should play in the G League. And so, like, I don't know, maybe that's your option. Maybe that's how they start using the G League, is like for those redshirt rookies. I don't know. Like, I don't think that that's a particular – I think Lonzo's going to be fine, and I think rookies in general are fine with taking these lumps. It's just people have to understand that this is what's going to happen, and people don't. They expect these guys to be superstars from day one, and they're just – that doesn't happen.
Well, and that's kind of – that's playing a huge part in where this idea was coming from, is because I'm looking at Twitter, and there are I got to look at my list. I just added a few follows today for the job, but I follow 581 people. If I'm following somebody on the internet or on Twitter, I think they're smart.
Do you think that's why you're so angry all the time, because you follow too many people?
I don't know. I mean, I don't think that I'm that angry. My mentions are just always a tire fire. It can wear on me a little bit. But
it's
like,
it's almost like you tweet horrible things sometimes.
Yeah, it's chicken egg situation. But
yeah.
But like I follow especially people. So I have like of those 581 people, I probably have about 100 people muted. There are certain accounts that like as their tweets go down my timeline, I don't necessarily pay attention to them as I go down. But there are accounts that I legitimately respect and legitimately consider smart people who have lost their freaking minds this year regarding Lonzo Ball and the other rookies that are playing in the NBA right now. And it's crazy to me the way that we talk about these rookies. And here in a second, I want to keep building on this idea, because I think it's an interesting conversation, not just about the way teams groom their young stars or their cornerstone pieces moving forward, but I think it's also it's also an opportunity to look at ourselves as analysts in the grand spectrum of people listen to in basketball analysis. I think it's an interesting exercise to look at the way we look at this stuff as well. So here in a second, we're going to keep building on that. Enjoy some fun stuff. All right, so to keep on with this conversation, do you think it hurts rookies? Do you think it actively hurts rookies the way that social media rips them apart day in, day out if they are not immediately superstars?
I mean, I don't think that we can say anything is true across the board. I'm sure that there are some rookies that it probably hurts, and there are some that probably don't care that much. And to be honest, I think Lonzo is closer to the latter than he is to the former, mm-hmm. because I don't think that he's a guy that just sits on Twitter and looks at everything that's said about him. I do think that he's very aware of the perception of him right now, and I think it is finally starting to get to him a little bit, but I still am fairly certain that he's going to be like fine. I'm aggressively not worried about Lonzo.
Yeah, I would agree. And that's frankly beside the point, right? Like I would agree. And actually, I wouldn't say it's beside the point. It's the reason I'm thinking about this, or I was thinking about this today, is that like if I'm the Lakers, right? And it's kind of tough because they had this thing scheduled beforehand, and they were talking about it at the game last night. But they, after Lonzo goes through the worst game, arguably, of his basketball life, right? I don't think he's ever played as poorly as he did against the 76ers the other night. After that, he's immediately thrust upon Periscope to answer questions about who knows what. And it doesn't matter.
Well,
that,
I mean, you would know if you would watch the Periscope.
Yeah, I don't care about that stuff. But if I'm Lonzo and I just finished playing the worst game of my basketball career, the last thing I want to do is hop on Lakers Twitter, which I don't even know what their account is at in terms of follows worldwide. It has to be insane, right?
I believe they're actually the most followed team in North America. if I remember correctly.
It sounds right.
Yeah.
So
it sounds right, so it must be true.
Yeah, but so during his Periscope,
the Lakers have over 7 million followers.
Yeah, that's insane. But
I'm almost there. I'm gonna catch you one day at Lakers. I'm coming for you.
They have literally what, 1,000 times more followers than I do. But they, while he's on his Periscope, you could actually see some of the comments coming. I didn't watch it. I didn't pay attention to the comments because I knew it was just going to annoy me. But you could just see some of the stuff coming, right? He predicts the Final Four. Oh, cool. He goes 0 for 4 there too, right? And so my question is, if there's a player who comes in who doesn't look like they're necessarily ready, and it's taken a lot of people by surprise that Lonzo hasn't been ready to play offensively in the NBA. It's taken me completely by surprise. But if you draft somebody and their first day in the NBA is going to be before they turn, say, 20, wouldn't it be cool to have that option where they could sit out a year? You could redshirt them. They get paid, so you don't have to. They don't have to worry about risking getting hurt while they're playing for free in college. You don't have to worry about any of that stuff. All you have to focus on is watching these guys play night in, night out. Focus on your own personal development, both physically and mentally. You spend a year around coaches, around scouts. You listen in and watch tape sessions with the rest of your team. And by the end of the year, and as you get ready for what would have been your sophomore year, you are now more ready than you would have been a full year in advance at a time in your life where you're developing arguably more than any professional is expected to develop in as quickly a time as a top-end basketball draft is. So like we used to see it with quarterbacks in the NFL. Aaron Rodgers sat for like 2-3 years and then immediately burst onto the scene and is now the best quarterback I've ever seen play the position. You have, we already talked about the Sixers guys. Julius Randle, it'd be interesting to see Julius Randle's reaction to this. But Julius Randle sat out a year and you know, it's taken a couple
years. Obviously was unstoppable on the scene in his second year.
Well, he wasn't unstoppable, but I would
I was being sarcastic.
Yeah, well, but he was I'd like to know his answer to this, right? Because he, and it's tough because he's
Julius, breaking your leg, good thing or best?
Right, yeah,
thing?
Like that's what I was going to say, like, hey Julius, what do you...
I'll make sure to ask him that at the next game I go to.
but as an idea overall, I think until we take a look at ourselves, and we'll do that here in a second, but until we take a look at ourselves and the way we analyze these guys as 18, 19, 20-year-old rookies in one of the most competitive industries in the entire world, I would argue that it probably isn't beneficial to have underdeveloped players go up against grown-ass men and be evaluated as unfairly as they currently are.
Okay, so this is the problem with when you don't prepare me for shows or let me know what we're going to talk about, because I can't kill your premise before we record with a fact, before we record. Uh-huh. But I've got some breaking news for you in a second. So Anthony, as of like about 2 or 3 hours before we recorded this, we got a Woj bomb, we got some breaking news.
Whoa.
Okay, so... the league and the basketball, what was it, the Commission on Basketball or something? Hold on, I gotta look up this name. Is filibustering and talking. Okay, so they met with the Commission on College Basketball that got formed in the wake of these NCAA investigations by the FBI. Mm-hmm. It's chaired by Condoleezza Rice, and there's apparently, according to Woj, momentum gathering to reshape the one-and-done draft entry rule. And based on Woj's reporting, which I have no reason to not believe because he's literally never been wrong, it sounds like the league is talking about a proposal that would allow players to come into the league without going to college, but then if they went to college, they would have to stay 2 years.
Okay, so one, I don't think you should have to force somebody to go to college or stay.
No,
in
you're
college.
Not forcing them to go.
No,
to college.
To stay in college. Once you decide to go to, I think it's wrong that on any level, you should not be allowed to go professional as soon as you feel like you're ready to go professional.
And, yes, and, but I think that this is a better solution than the one and done.
I don't think there should be any rule.
No, like I agree. But I think this is like this is closer to an ideal solution than the one and done.
I don't know, man. Because, again, like I just sound like John. I don't, I'll tell you what, man. But like, my problem with it is that – so let's say you're borderline coming out of high school. And now you're going to tell that kid you have to sit out 2 full years and not take any income for 2 full years before you're finally able to when you were borderline in the first place. Like that's just
or come make millions of dollars.
Well, but that's the thing though. Is
no, that, I get it. Like I said, it's not perfect, but it's
like a less
better
nuanced
than
version of what they have right now.
Huh?
It's a less nuanced version of what they have right now. We're basically
I think it's a more fair version of what they have right now. I think it gives you more of a choice.
How? Like how?
Because you get to choose. You can go to the NBA right out of high school if you feel like you're ready, and if you think that you need time in college to develop, then you just have to go for 2 years.
I think a better solution would be what I'm proposing. Especially if we
what I'm saying is that like what you're proposing is not going to happen. Like it sounds like there's very real life momentum to not only get rid of this like never do something like this red shirt deal, but essentially like make college more of that red shirt thing, and or like players are going to come in even more raw.
Yeah, it sounds like it's going to go tremendously wrong, because like if you're Brandon Ingram, right? Ingram is somebody who probably would have gone pro out of high school.
I don't know. Was he that highly touted that he would have been as high? Like, I don't remember him being like the clear-cut number two pick in the draft, entering the college season.
There was some talk about him being number one. Like, his,
no,
especially
after
Dirk.
After the college season, not or before. Duke.
Well, it was close. Like he was a pretty highly.
That's not how I remember it. I remember it was Ben Simmons and then everybody else, and then Ingram had a really strong start and burst onto the scene. But there was not nearly as much enthusiasm for Ingram at the beginning of the season as there was by the end.
Well, how about for somebody like Jahlil Okafor, right? Well,
Jahlil Okafor would actually arguably be better off if he had come in out of high school because he would have like started those paychecks earlier.
But the reason I bring up Okafor,
he would have been the number one pick.
Probably.
Yeah.
Probably.
So he'd be better off.
But wouldn't he have been better off as a if he would have come into the league and again
and not ended up on the Sixers?
We're gonna come back in a second because I have to collect myself. You keep killing me right before we go to break.
Well, we already did the break, so
no,
I don't
know
what.
Like 12 minutes. I don't know why you did it at 12 minutes. So we're going to take a quick second here in which after Harrison went crazy like 5 minutes too early, not for the first time of his life, but we are going to come back to this topic, and then we're also going to answer a question at the very end of this. All right, so we know I didn't read the report. I got Woj's like text tweet.
You could have just said I didn't read.
But I saw that Woj tweeted out that they had met and they were thinking about getting rid of this one and done rule. I think the one and done rule is smarter than the direction that they're going in right now. And it sounds all right, honest, I want to get down to the bottom of this. Why how is telling somebody that you have to stick in college for 2 years if you don't think you're ready, or if you don't think you're ready to go pro, like how does that make any sense whatsoever? Like
it at least gives them the option where if they're an 18-year-old and they would like to make a profession out of something that they're good at, they can go and do that, or they have to wait to enter. It's like the same. Like I'm shocked that you're so mad about this, given that you're such a big baseball fan, and baseball does the same thing.
And I think it's wrong that baseball does it. Like I think it's wrong that in any way, shape, or form, we tell an adult, like basically.
I agree.
In this country,
I 100% agree. This gives them more of an option, though.
Yeah, but like you're forcing a kid into a situation where if they aren't 100% sure, you're either going to force them to go pro.
Right now, they don't even have a choice.
Well.
That's like un-American.
Yeah, But
make America great again and let 18-year-olds join the NBA.
I always knew it. I knew you wore that red hat. But my problem with this is that you're
taking if you can go somewhere and get shot, you should be allowed to go and play in the NBA.
Well, yeah. Like, yes.
You know?
Period. Without the 2-year disclaimer thing. My thing is,
I agree.
You're telling me that it gives them a choice. And yes, theoretically and technically, it actually does give them
It
gives them an actual choice, but it's a choice that a lot of these kids are not ready to make. Period. Like when you're 18 years old. When I was 18 years old, I'm an idiot now. When I was 18 years old, I had a hard time deciding on which college to go to, and I wound
How is forcing them to go to school for a year, no matter what, a better option?
Because it's only a year.
Comparatively, yeah, this way they're not being forced.
But so either you're forced into a situation where you're probably going to be a bust if you're borderline, if you're deciding one way or the other. And your situation tells you have to go to the NBA because you have to. You're now climbing an uphill battle that a lot of kids are not ready to do. Ingram would have been a disaster a year earlier in the NBA.
And Ingram probably would have stayed 2 years in college.
But how is playing a completely different game beneficial to somebody who's thinking about going to the NBA now a year longer?
I don't know what to tell you, man. Like, I think it's a better option because it actually gives them the choice. So, like, I don't know. I think that we're probably just going to have to agree to disagree on this one.
You're insane.
I think I would hazard a guess that more of our listeners will agree with me than with you.
Ooh. I'll put up a poll. Which system do you prefer?
I think you are very much in the minority here.
I don't think – well – I want to be frank. I want to be clear. I don't think either of these choices are either of these systems are a good idea.
I 100% agree. I think the come out right after high school or go 2 years is a better option, though, than forcing everybody to go to college when for some guys there's absolutely no point in them going to college.
Would you argue – so you and I are both – obviously.
Like, I just don't think – like, I don't think that college necessarily makes you a better basketball – a more prepared basketball player to play in the NBA.
Neither do I. I would agree.
Yeah. But and so, like, forcing everybody to go to college for a year is, like, I think just over – like, it's over the top and it's un-American.
And now you're doubling it. If you aren't
convinced. No, because they're not forced anymore. They can have a choice to go to the NBA. And yes, they will be gambling on themselves, but at least they have a choice to not have to waste a year in college.
Right, but if
they feel
kids...
like they're not ready and they need to go and play, physically develop or something for 2 years, then I mean they could still probably go and get drafted and like end up developing for their NBA team, but then that goes back to the same problem that you're discussing now where guys that are one and done aren't ready.
Right, so...
And so this is like all the stuff that the league and the Players Association has to discuss, but the Players Association wants that limit because it keeps young guys from coming for the older guys who are generally more active in the Players Association's jobs.
No, it's actually... it's there to help the owners from drafting Kwame Brown.
Well, yes, but the NBA Players Association wants this. They don't want more 18-year-olds coming in and taking their presidents and their like cabinet members' jobs.
I would argue it's probably there more for the owners. Like Kwame Brown
was stipulated, like literally in Woj's report, it's like saying that the NBPA, like that is something that they want.
Yeah. And they're an idiot. They're one, selfish for wanting that really badly, and two, stupid. But my thing here is, you're forcing a kid to decide. All right, I think. On a scale of 1 to 10 of being ready to play in the league, if I'm anything higher than a 5, I'm probably going to put my name in the draft. And I'm going to put myself in a situation where I am not physically or mentally ready to A, compete with grown-ass men in the NBA, and B, be a freaking millionaire and now have that responsibility on me for the first time in my life. That to me spells disaster. There's a story out there. Jermaine O'Neal, when he was drafted by the Portland Trail Blazers, he came straight out of high school. And when he was drafted, he was not able to manage a checking account, pay his bills. He had no idea where to get food. He couldn't cook for himself. So what the Blazers wound up doing for him was they wound up paying rent for his mom to live with him so that she could help take care of him in that situation. And what you're doing is you're either going to force a kid into that situation like Jermaine O'Neal was. And fortunately, he was talented enough to undergo that adversity and come out of it and still have a really successful NBA career. A lot of guys don't. And so what you're going to force is you're going to force a kid into either that situation or you're going to tell him to risk now twice as long as they're already currently risking, risk injury and never make a dime off of yourself. Or again, get forced into that situation with Jermaine O'Neal. It lacks nuance completely.
it's you know what else lacks nuance completely? Forcing every single situation to go to college for a year.
Yeah. Well,
that's what I'm saying. Like, to me, this is a better option. I guess we're just going to have to agree to disagree.
All right. Let's end this show with one question and get up out of here, and send everybody off until the weekend with a question from iTunes. Thanks everybody for responding the way you did. The reviews have been cool to watch. The questions are thought-provoking. Harrison, give us a question.
Okay, so for this question is from Bro Christ, and it says, this is a favorite podcast featuring Clownthony and Harrison. My question is, how many Clownthonies does it take to bring up D'Lo in a podcast?
I haven't brought him up once.
So. Okay, well, so I guess more than one. okay, so...
The reviews love me.
Yeah, so we'll go with as far as actual question, we'll just end on a fun hypothetical. So this one is from Byron Ash, and I don't know if that's a reference to the Lakers former coach or an attempt to get one of us fined, but that would be hilarious if it actually was. Great podcast, love the consistency with that you guys produce with. On the 2009-2010 championship teams, who was the better, more valuable player, Ron Artest or Trevor Ariza? Was going from Trevor to Ron an upgrade or a downgrade? So I actually have mixed thoughts on this, and I would say that going from playoff Trevor Ariza to Ron Artest was a downgrade, but I think overall, as far as like what Trevor Ariza is and what he ended up doing, that for that one season in 2010 where the Lakers needed Ron Artest, I think he was the better option.
All right,
like, so overall for what he did throughout the year, I think Trevor Ariza, like, playoff 2009 championship run playoff Trevor Ariza was better than the Ron Artest that the Lakers had in 2010, but I don't know that he would have continued to play like that.
Contract year Trevor Ariza is an actual thing.
Yeah.
Like that became an actual thing over the course of his career. The other thing, too, is that they could have had both. Like, that's the bummer, is that because – and Ariza, I forget the specifics of the situation, but basically Trevor Ariza's agent completely bungled the situation and made a clerical error. And while the Lakers were signing Metal World Peace with, I think it was the mid-level exception at the time, Trevor Ariza's agent, who he wound up firing, I believe, because of the situation, he essentially forced or convinced Trevor Ariza that the Lakers weren't interested when the Lakers still were. And so the Lakers could have had Trevor Ariza and Ron Artest, which would have been a really fun dynamic. In terms of asking or answering the actual question, it's tough for me to say that I don't prefer Ron Artest when you consider how huge a shot he hit and how big he came up in that series against Boston. I don't know. Like, Paul Pierce wasn't a particularly great matchup for Trevor Ariza because of how big he was and how physical he was. And it was, I mean, it showed right away. I believe Ron Artest and Paul Pierce got into it either the tip-off of the first time the two teams met in the regular season or the tip-off of the first game in the final series. But that kind of set a tone that Ron was not going to back down at all with Paul. And I don't know if Trevor would have had the ability to defend Paul Pierce the way Meta did, or Ron did at the time. So to answer the actual question, I'd maybe lean slightly Ron, but in terms of what would have helped the Lakers long term more, I don't think it's even a question. Ron Trevor Ariza is still in the league and is playing a vital role on a title contender Houston team.
Yeah. Long term, for sure, Trevor Ariza was the better option.
Yeah. So, yeah. I mean, that's the bummer, that the Lakers could have had both. Like, they could have had Ron for that series against Boston, and they could have had the longevity of having Trevor Ariza. And Ariza probably keeps Kobe healthy a little bit longer, because Kobe had to do so much on both sides of the ball before he tore his Achilles. So it's tough, man. That's one of the fun what ifs in the history of the Lakers. But yeah, I mean, for that one series, our test. But in terms of long term sustainability of the franchise, it's a reason. It's not particularly close.
Yep, I agree. So that was a good way to end the podcast, because now I'm less mad at you than I was before.
And by the way, that is a perfect example of a question that you guys can come completely out of left field with, because it doesn't have to be all regarding this team. I am a Laker nut. I can go back into even before I was born.
Emphasis on the nut.
Yeah, I am a Laker nut. I am a crazy person. But I would say in terms of Laker history, I love talking about Laker history. Harrison, you're less into that stuff, but if it gets you to start reading up on Laker lore, that'd be cool too.
Do you really think, like, 2009 and 2010, you think that's too far back for me?
I would say what I would deem as too far back for you is like the late 90s, mid to late 90s, like, Lakers. I don't think you know anybody on that roster.
No, I mean, I know, like, some of the players, like Sed Ceballos and, mm-hmm. Nick Van Exel, and, they were teams, for sure, but I definitely know more about, the title. About the title teams.
Darius is going to fight you in the streets for not remembering.
I mean, like, the first team that, like, I really got into was the 2001 team.
We need to make a segment out of this, where you...
I was 10 years old. Like, that was when I started watching basketball.
I know. I'm saying, like, we need to figure out a way.
My parents. Fun fact about me that explains probably a lot about me. My parents only let me watch PBS until I was like 10, and then I was allowed to watch basketball. And then around like 14, I was allowed like Nickelodeon.
You could have told me that your parents only let you watch the Spock scenes in Star Trek, and I would have completely believed you.
Oh, that's actually true. My dad would occasionally let me watch Star Trek with him.
you're starting to make... But we got to figure out a segment where you go back into, like, Lakers history. You read, like, a Wikipedia page on the 1997, 1998 Lakers and just find some of this stuff. We got to bring, like, Drew Unga on here, because he's, like, a dictionary or an encyclopedia on those that era of the Lakers. It's pretty cool. All right. That does it, though, for this episode of the Locked On Lakers podcast. This was a fun one. We're going to have random shows like this where we kind of bring topics out of left field, because talking about the Lakers day in, day out can get kind of tedious, and listening about these Lakers specifically can get kind of tedious day in, day out. So I hope everybody enjoyed this. Send us those topics. Anything that you want to talk about. It doesn't even have to relate to the Lakers. Like, Justice League came out. Ask us for our review of Justice League if and when we see it. I'm sure Harrison and I will probably go to blows over that the way we did over the NCAA rules.
This is one of those nights where, like, I'm really glad that we don't record in the same room, because I think I would have stabbed you with this pen in my hand.
I'm just going to end it there.
Yeah, that's fine.